Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's not only Friday, it's follow-up Friday, and we want to follow up on a detail from a conversation Brian had yesterday. Brian was joined by two guests who explained the case of a man in Berlin who seems to be cured of HIV after he received bone marrow transplants to treat leukemia. It's an incredible case which has re-energized the research community since hope for a cure had practically died out. The cure, as it's being called, hinges on a bone marrow donation from a donor who had a mutation known as Delta 32, a relatively common mutation in Northern Europe, which almost completely protects a person from ever getting HIV. Then one of our guests made an interesting observation about the procedure. Jeffrey Lawrence, an AIDS virus researcher and senior scientific consultant at AMFAR, said there's no way this would ever have happened in the United States.
Most insurance companies will pay for the workup of two exact matches. If you have a Cadillac plan, they might pay for 10. In the Berlin case, this person had 232 exact matches, and they were going to go through all 232 until they found the one donor that had this extra little hook, this extra mutation that would potentially make him a donor to effect a cure. And it was donor number 61, actually, that they had to go through. And in the United States, you would have gotten a donor number 2. You would have never found them.
And so that was the fascinating aspect of the segment. So joining me now to discuss that detail and to answer questions about the bone marrow registry is Dr. Willis Navarro, Medical Director of Transplant Services for the National Bone Marrow Program. And listeners, if you have questions about the registry or related transplants, our lines are open, 212-433-WMYC, 212-433-9692. And if you have questions for Dr. Navarro of the National Marrow Donor Program, or if you have experience as a doctor, patient, or donor with the registry program, please give us a call or leave a comment on our webpage, WNYC.org. And Dr. Navarro, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here with you today.
So let's get right to what that clip suggested. Do you agree with Jeffrey Lawrence's assessment? Would doctors ever have gotten all the way to donor 61 here in the U.S. with our healthcare system?
Well, I think it's a complex issue, as everyone's aware. The healthcare system in our country is really multifaceted in so many ways. So insurance always plays a role, of course, in the healthcare system for everything we do in medical care, including marrow transplantation. But I think it's important to keep in mind that the limiter here, I don't think, really is insurance. The limitation is really identifying the appropriate donor. This was really an amazing idea, and really kudos to Dr. Hooter and his group for coming up with this idea. The reality is that we are actually planning a clinical trial here in the States through the bone marrow, blood and marrow transplantation clinical trials network that's going to attempt to replicate exactly what Dr. Hooter and his group did. We plan to, through the National Marrow Donor Program, identify donors who are homozygotes, that is to say, they have two copies of a mutation to the gene for CCR5, which is the receptor that allows HIV to enter cells. And we'll plan to then identify donors and then, on a clinical trial, use those donors if they're available for transplantation, again, in the same setting for leukemia or lymphoma, a standard indication for transplant using an unrelated donor. So our plan is to try and replicate this result and really take it to the next step, which is one step beyond proof of concept.
Well, in Germany, roughly one in every 100 people have this Delta 32 mutation, which it seems makes them immune to contracting HIV. If we were to search the bone marrow registry here in the U.S., do you have a sense of whether you could replicate that result, of how many people might have that mutation?
Yes, we're thinking that we will be able to do that. In modeling of this of the gene frequency, and of the frequency of donor availability for a given patient. We're estimating that out of the 15 patients that will be enrolled in this trial, this is going to be a small trial, then we'll probably be able to identify a donor who's CCR5 Delta 32 homozygous in probably for one or two of those 15 patients. And that has to do primarily with the fact that some patients have many donors available to choose from, and some patients have fewer donors to choose from. And since we're looking for a mutation that occurs with a frequency of about 1% in Northern Europeans, then our estimate is that we'll probably identify one donor who would be an appropriate donor otherwise, who also coincidentally happens to have the CCR5 Delta 32 mutation. That'll even if we identify one donor-patient pair and proceed with the transplant, though, this will be very helpful for understanding exactly what whether this one experience from Berlin was a unique experience or whether this is something that we can replicate.
Fascinating. All right. We have the board is just lighting up, as you can imagine, with phone calls.
Yeah.
Let's take a call from Nick. He's in Cliffside Park, and he has a question. Nick, you're on WNYC with Dr. Willis Navarro, the Medical Director of Transplant Services for the National Marrow Donor Program. Please go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Navarro. If 1 in 100 people, even if it's 1 in 200, you know, that means in America there's probably a half a million or more people to have what you call the Delta 32 mutation. Why shouldn't we just embark on a program of genetic testing for everybody, where all these markers are detected? And it looks like you could actually, I mean, if the proof of concept works out and this is not some kind of freak accident, it looks like there's a cure for not just this disease, but for potentially lots of other diseases where we can find markers where some people are immune. And why can't we also use stem cell to breed more? Like if you get the bone marrow from somebody, why can't we, you know, breed more of that, make tissue culture and you know, get more of the material?
Thank you, Nick. A doctor?
Those are great questions.
Two questions really wrapped into one.
Yeah, exactly. So the first question is, aren't there a lot of folks in the U.S. who have this mutation? The answer is there probably are. The gene frequency is about 1 in 100 for homozygosity, that is having both copies being abnormal, and that's where what we are looking for HIV resistance. But that's only in folks who are of Northern European extraction. Others who are even from Southern Europe or from other parts of the world, the gene frequency simply isn't there. It's vanishingly rare as you move out of Northern Europe and essentially non-existent when you move into populations in, for example, Asia or Africa. So those Americans who are of Asian or African or even Hispanic background almost certainly will not have the appropriate double mutation. So that does limit who is available as a donor by ethnicity. For allogeneic transplant, the most likely donor for the most likely matched donor is going to be somebody of similar ethnicity. So this does limit this particular technique to probably to Northern Europeans. That's the presumption based on the gene frequency. The thing is that with marrow transplantation, we're not trying to match, for example, blood type, as would be the case for a solid organ transplant. We're actually trying to match a much, much more complicated genetic identity that involves multiple molecules that we have to match. And as a result of that, the challenge isn't that there aren't enough donors. The problem is that we just have to look for the using the lottery as a great example, we're looking for a lottery ticket where the lottery numbers have come up, and those are those of the patient. Hmm. And we're looking for somebody out there who holds that lottery ticket,
yeah,
that has the right answer. Now, some numbers are more frequent than others, so it's not like a uniform lottery.
Yeah.
So some people will have many, many donors, and some people will have very few donors.
I'm glad you explained that, because this is why it's so important for people to register, because
right,
you really need to look for those precise matches. It's not quite the same as organ donation, although that's also terribly important for people to do. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Brian Lehrer on WMYC. My guest is Dr. Willis Navarro. He's the Medical Director of Transplant Services for the National Marrow Donor Program. We're talking about the role of the bone marrow transplant in a case of a man who had HIV and then did not. And bone marrow transplants are useful for this procedure. Now, I want to make sure we're getting this right, Doctor, because it produces new blood cells. Is that correct? Are there other kinds of transplants that also might pass on the Delta 32 gene?
No, this would be the only kind of transplant where the immune systems are transplanted, and those are the critical element that would have to be transplanted in order to confer immunity to HIV. So marrow transplantation really is the only marrow, and by virtue of marrow transplant, also immune system transplant, because they go hand in hand. So providing a new immune system that's now resistant is one of the benefits that occurs in the setting of allogeneic transplantation.
Now, our guests also pointed out yesterday that this procedure isn't really a cure, and I put that word in quotes for HIV, because the possibility of dying from one of these transplants is better than 15%. So really, only someone battling another disease like leukemia would undergo the procedure. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think it's important that anytime we're making important decisions in life in general, and certainly in medicine, we always look at risk and benefit. And so the risk of the procedure is non-trivial, as you point out, but the benefit is in certain particular cases, it may be the only way that a patient may be able to be able to look into the long horizon from their disease, particularly with some forms of leukemia where relapse rates are essentially going to be 100% without a marrow transplant. So this is why Timothy Brown was transplanted for acute leukemia, not for HIV. I know that it sounds very appealing to think about the idea of doing a transplant purely for the cure of HIV,
mm-hmm.
but the reality, as you point out, is that the risk of the transplant versus the risk of HIV, which it can generally be well controlled now for most people for many years, doesn't warrant the risk of the procedure at this point, unless there's another disease. Right?
Very important distinction. Let's take a call from Susie, who I believe is calling from Greenwich Village. Susie, you're on WNYC.
Oh, thank you. I was on the registry, and when I turned 60, I got a nice letter from you people saying, thank you very much, we don't need you anymore. I understand this is not true for solid organ donation. I'm still an organ donor, and I'm a regular blood donor because I'm O negative, and they always want it. But they don't want my marrow, apparently, and I wondered why.
Thank you for your call, Susie. Doctor, can you explain?
Sure. So donors who provide products, marrow or peripheral blood stem cells, for the benefit of an unrelated recipient are performing a task that really is phenomenally gracious, and there's no benefit for the donor other than the knowledge that they've helped somebody. But there is a small amount of risk, which is minimal, of course, but not zero. And so as a result of that, we've taken the stance that we want to minimize the likelihood of causing any harm to any donor. Age is one factor that we weigh into that. And as one grows older, the presence of diseases that are harder to pick up, even by good physical exams, which all donors go through, becomes more and more of an issue. For example, heart disease that's not easy to detect. So one of the issues is protecting donors as they grow older from things that we don't anticipate are there based on the evaluations that are done. The second issue, though, and probably also very important for the age issue, is that it turns out that recipients who receive products from donors who are much younger, who are on the younger side, fare better than patients who've received products from older patients. And as a result of that, the transplant centers select donors ideally, young male donors are what most transplant centers strive to choose.
And, Doctor, this is probably where I should cut in because I only have a few seconds left and ask you how people can get added to the registry, because I'm sure that's the one question everybody wants to hear the answer to before we wrap the segment.
Absolutely. One of the optimal ways is to go to bethematch.org, and that's all one word, bethematch.org. And on that website, there is a place to click for join the registry, and it provides all the instructions for how to go forward with doing that, including some medical questionnaires. It's a very simple procedure and involves a cheek swab for DNA that we use to determine genetic typing, and then that information goes into the database and waits there until somebody comes along who needs that particular donor.
And I imagine you just remain on the registry until you are notified that you're needed?
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, Doctor, thank you very much. It's been very, very informative. My guest has been Dr. Willis Navarro, Medical Director of Transplant Services for the National Marrow Donor Program. And you heard what he said. Go to bethematch.com to find out more about how you can register. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer on WMYC. Coming up next hour, a look at why crime rates have gone down despite expectations that recessions push rates up.